Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams and time for the breakfast table. So if you want to join the breakfast table, 844-967-2789. We're looking for a couple more, several callers who will join in the conversation for the next 45 minutes. So if you want to join us, by all means, 844-967-2789 is the number. Let's go to Bill. Hey, Bill, thank you very much for the call. You say what, my friend?
Governor Earl, I got to keep teasing you. We need you for governor. But I got to give, if there was ever the Nobel Peace Prize for radio, you and Sandy get it. Your conversation with CJ was very uplifting today. You two fellas, all three of you, did something this country is struggling to even think about. You came together with a common goal to make something better for our country. A while back, you guys were talking about, helping people. I'm involved in Christian leadership groups, and we start them and we get them going and we move on and start more of them. We believe in thoughts and prayers, but unlike one of our past governors, he would always say that to these people who were involved in mass murder or mass shootings. I'm talking about Scott. And he'd say our thoughts and prayers. Well, his thoughts and prayers could have been too serious because he did absolutely nothing about the guns that were out there. And when we pray, we also pray with conviction that we're going to do something about this. You can't just, God will help us, but we all got to work together. But you guys today did something I couldn't even believe I was hearing. The three of you found a common goal and a good way to get things done. Gosh, you guys, again, the Nobel Peace Prize goes to radio today. Thank you, guys, for what you
did. Hey, Bill, thank you very much for the call.
It's interesting, Bill, one thing you said there, I think it means a lot, which is the prayer. I'm not particularly prayerful myself, but my understanding of the prayer is that most people in prayers would seek guidance about what it is that I can do to change the world. It's not that someone would pray to God to change the world, but that they would pray to God to seek guidance as to how can I best change the world. And if that's the prayer, then that's a prayer for action, right? It's a prayer for guided action. What can I do that can best serve improvement? And my fear is that a great deal of the evangelical movement today is not making those kinds of prayers, but rather it's the other kind of prayer, which is they're praying to God to make the world better. And that isn't going to happen.
All right.
Well, I totally agree with you, because I teach people in these classes that, number one, we need Christian leadership in our country big time. But when you pray with conviction. And conviction means in prayer that you believe it's going to happen. And just like you said, Sandy, God's going to guide us to make it happen. So, it's not just thoughts and prayers. It's praying with conviction. But thank you, guys. You have really achieved a high point in radio.
Hey, Bill, thank you very much for the call. Let's bring CJ back. CJ?
Well, I know I've caused a lot of turmoil in just your gentleman's relationship with
Listen, CJ, but let me say this. You don't cause any turmoil. I mean, there are no enemies with people who call this show. It's a radio talk show.
Well, actually, CJ, I think what we're really trying to do is create a dialogue between people who have differences and who have, to date, tended to simply state their differences to one another rather than having a conversation about about how it is that maybe they might agree about something, at least the problem, and then maybe disagree somewhat about how, what the solutions are, but start talking about solutions, because that's really, I suppose, what we've tried to achieve. And I thank you for your call today, because I think I do agree with Bill. I don't think we should get the Nobel Prize. I just think we're acting. This is called civility, and I think it could be a really successful formula for moving the ball forward.
Hey, CJ, man, thank you very much for the call, my friend.
You bet. Thank you,
gentlemen. Thank you. You know, Sandy, you know, this whole thing and the crux of the conversation that we've been talking about today clearly is as you stated about people. Repeat.
Well, exactly. I mean, we got fixated on the one subject, which is the American dream, which is one area of denial. When I was talking about denial
is what I was looking for.
So the, you know, denial is this process of disregarding facts and stating things as you wish they would be rather than as they are. And many people, it's kind of a joke. You know, he's in denial about this or he's in denial about that. Well, the American public, I think, is in denial about a number of issues. One of them is that the American dream is there for everyone, for everyone's taking. All they need to do is buckle down and they'll get it. And so we've been talking about the American dream, but there are a number of things that are simply not as we wish they would be.
So I want to move to the denial about what's happening with Ukraine right now, because I've been reading and watching and listening, and there's now, it seems to, there's some folk who are finally starting to think, hey, maybe we pushed Vladimir Putin too far. Maybe he might feel that he's cornered, and maybe he might think about using a tactical nuclear weapon. And yet, what we are saying now is we are clearly stating to him, if you even give it a thought, we are going to, this is what we're going to do.
Well, I mean,
but that whole conversation, Sandy, to me is insane.
Well, the denial I think we're in is that there are, we're in denial about what the realities in the world are in various parts of the world. So, you know, there are some realities associated with Taiwan and China, and there are some realities that exist within countries like China, and realities that exist in countries like India and Saudi Arabia and all kinds of places. And we, in our denial, want to think about the notion that America will export to the rest of the world exactly the kind of
democracy,
socioeconomic and democratic processes we have. First of all, many of the parts of the world would look at our situation and say, well, we don't want exactly that. We're hoping for better, different, okay? They might want the Norwegian version or the German version or some other versions rather than ours. But furthermore, they might not want or need any version exactly of what we've got. And every one of these places has a society that is premised on what they have ongoing inside their society, and they're evolving. And so we need to look at reality and not have wishful thinking about particularly our foreign policy, because it's our wishful thinking that is going to push us in the direction of doing things that are exceedingly dangerous. And, you know, our wishful thinking about Ukraine, starting in about 2010, the notion that Ukraine was a bastion of democracy that we needed to preserve, when in fact the reality was that Ukraine was a bastion of corruption, that had something that was calling itself a democracy but was in many ways failing as a democracy, to the point where even if you listen to that Trump phone call that was the basis for his first impeachment, it was clear that Ukraine was not a country that we were interested in sending a lot of cash to, that it was very corrupt, that we were worried about what direction it was headed. We were worried about whether they had a crooked attorney general. You know, it's a fraught country. But But we had wishful thinking about it that pushed us in the direction of wanting them in NATO and talking about them as a bastion of democracy and ignoring the reality of that whole region with respect to its history. And now we're doing the same thing with Taiwan. And, to me, that is another form of wishful thinking. It's denial of reality.
So, you know, Sandy, I was listening over the weekend to different outlets, and they were talking about, okay, so now Putin is put to the vote in Crimea and other places. You know, these people are voting whether or not they want to become annexed, mm-hmm. become a part of Russia, and so the conversation was, well, there's a reason he's doing that, because then if Ukraine, you know, comes back and anybody attacks, you know,
yeah, then they're attacking Crimea. Russia,
yeah.
Proper,
right? So that would be reason and rationale enough, you know, for him to use tactical nuclear weapons. And then the conversation went to, well, Biden and the United States is giving him warnings that if he does any of these things, you know, this is how we're going to respond. And I'm listening to this, and then other people are saying, well, you know, he might feel like he's cornered and he might be forced into it. What are we talking about, Sandy?
Well,
I mean, we can't, on the one hand,
well, we stuck our
encourage
nose.
Him.
Yes. We stuck our nose into something that we probably had no business sticking our nose in.
So how come the American people, you've said it, we talk about it, but the American people aren't paying any attention whatsoever to any of this?
Well, the American people think of our foreign policy in very simplistic, wishful thinking kinds of
we're
ways.
We're the most powerful people.
Well, we talk about how it is that we have used our military forces to try and preserve and spread democracy around the world. Okay. Well, the reality doesn't look like that, okay? The reality doesn't look like we spread democracy to Iraq. The reality
right.
of Afghan, I know that CJ would say, well, during the period we were in Afghanistan for 12 years or 18 years, that they had a form of democracy that was prevalent then. Well, that isn't actually the case either. The reality was that they had an extremely corrupt situation at that point, into which we were feeding billions of dollars to warlords to try and sustain a peace. But, you know, we tell ourselves that we're spreading democracy, that we were preserving democracy in Vietnam, you know, that all of these activities with our military force is done with denial.
So hold that thought. Phone lines are open at 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
So
to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789, 844-967-2789. You can text us that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, I can't help what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing and what I'm reading. And all of it points to a dangerous time, a more dangerous time in Ukraine than I think many of us are even thinking about, and I don't think this should sneak up on us, because it's not a sexy conversation to be had. It is yet a serious conversation that when people are asking questions internationally whether or not Vladimir Putin is mentally stable, and he continues to again talk about if he's painted into a corner, basically, you know, he would do whatever it takes. And clearly the response that he got from the United States is, if you use a weapon, a stern warning,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, here we are giving the second most powerful nation on earth a stern warning. And that nation is saying, hey, you know, we wouldn't be right here if you hadn't stuck your nose in a place that it shouldn't have been. So you could kind of understand where this is a time where...
Well, I mean, I think I've said before, once you get into a war, everything kind of goes out the door in terms of process. And so warfare involves brinksmanship. It involves, and clearly in this circumstance, I think what's being played here is that Vladimir Putin finds both the Donbass region and the Crimea region to be vital to Russia. And those are the two areas that he's talking about annexing. And by annexing them, he's trying to paint a red line to say, look, don't send troops over to these places anymore, because if you do, you'll be attacking Russia, and I'll feel free to Katie bar the door, use any kind of war munitions I want to, including nuclear. And so both the annexation and that talk is designed to try and keep Ukraine from proceeding with its counterattacks, because I think this probably does indicate that he is worried about the success of the Ukraine counterattacks, and that those counterattacks are aimed at potentially reclaiming Crimea,
right,
and also Donbass for Ukraine, which would be a terrible loss for him, because he started out in February of 2022, basically, and he had possession of Crimea, and he had a claim on and had an autonomous condition set up for the Donbass region. So he would have gone backwards with this war in the circumstance of Ukraine actually accomplishing those outcomes. Something he can't let happen. So, you know,
but
you
know, knows.
There could have been a negotiated settlement of some kind. It probably would have involved Ukraine joining the Russian version of NATO, which is this confederation of states that Kazakhstan and others belong to. I think Azerbaijan belongs to. No, I'm sorry. Armenia belongs to it. There's a current conflict right now in which Armenia is involved. So, you know. We stuck our nose into this situation. The situation turned into went from a brush fire into a bonfire, and now we're suffering the consequences of being at the edge of a war that might or might not have occurred if we had allowed something else to happen in the way of Ukraine negotiating with Russia a settlement short of this war.
But Sandy, they're not. Putin is not unmindful that he is here with his back against the wall because of the United States government.
Well, he would definitely describe it that way. The fact is the United States government, yes, the United States government stuck its nose into this circumstance, created this environment in which NATO was altogether possibly going to expand into Ukraine, which was anathema to Russia. We knew it was anathema to Russia. I'm not sure why it was, from our public policy and our special interest standpoint, why it was that we would have thought it was important for Ukraine to be part of NATO, because it would have made it much more likely that the United States would get into a direct conflict with Russia, which is something you would think we would not be interested in accomplishing, something which Roosevelt had the foresight to avoid, basically by agreeing to the Warsaw Pact countries, which was horrible for the Eastern European countries that were made a part of the Warsaw Pact, but it was clearly a pragmatic outcome. We have increasingly allowed domestic sort of NFL outlooks about the world to grab a hold of our foreign policy and to push us in the direction of finger pointing and animosity in the direction of both China and Russia. And it's a policy, I think, that is a denial of reality, and it's part of one of the denial issues I wanted to bring up today.
But he also knows that there would be no talk about Ukraine retaking Crimea or the Donbass without the United States weaponry. So, I mean, he's not, the guy's not senile.
He knows
that none of this would be possible
and
if we weren't supplying the weaponry, this weaponry that makes it possible for them to even have a counteroffensive.
Yes, absolutely. And that's why he's talking about nuclear
right.
weapons, and that's why he's pointing the finger in the ways he is. And the fact is that he initiated this war, I don't think wisely. I think he's suffering now consequences inside his country, because I think there is going to be, and is already started to be, a remarkable reaction inside of his country to the mobilization, much as there would be in the United States. You know, we have a volunteer army, and we don't tend to worry too much about what kind of military adventures we get into, as long as it's all just volunteers.
Right.
But the day that the president has to announce that every young man age 18 to 26 is going to be drafted, we end up with a great deal more analysis on the part of the American public as to whether we ought to be involved.
All right, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789. We'll be back.
These arms are mine. They are lonely.
Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And I know this conversation is one that, you know, I think we don't think about a lot, Sandy. You know, the American people are still fatigued from Iraq and Afghanistan. I really do believe we are. And so, you know, and because we don't have troops there in Ukraine, because we don't have a physical presence there, it's kind of like out of sight, out of mind. But I think if, you know, because that happens, Sandy, because we don't have troops there, we don't think about it as much. But I think in this instance, it can't just be that we don't have troops there, that the danger element doesn't exist. I think it's more dangerous now.
Well, I think that we didn't think about it that much even when we had troops there, because we had volunteer troops and we didn't have the threat of the draft. And so the impact of these wars was relatively minimal in terms of its impact on numbers of people. It didn't have much impact on many members of Congress. I think over all those years in Afghanistan and Iraq, there were very few members of Congress who had relatives who were involved in the conflicts. Now we have some veterans who've come back and who claim that their combat status, you know, should entitle them to be representatives of ours in Congress. But I think that the real problem here is that we've allowed our foreign policy, and particularly that which involves our military, our foreign military policy, to be something like the NFL. And we've got good guys and bad guys. We decide them, and then we decide that we have to be super macho. We have to learn how to step on them. And when we scored 20 points in the first quarter, we have to keep the foot down on their neck. So we've become super macho about the way we talk, and we talk about China as if they're an NFL opponent without regard to all of the risks that are associated with sticking our nose into the interest of a country like China in the South Pacific, and particularly sticking our nose into the interest of China with respect to Taiwan, a part of China that we recognize to be part of China in a treaty we signed in 1979, but which we would wishfully like to think about as if it were a separate country, a separate democratic country that we're going to protect the democracy of, which in fact it is not.
Did you see they backtracked what Biden said about whether or not we were going to get involved if militarily, if something happened with Taiwan. He was forced to backtrack that statement.
Well, but, you know, this has happened every time, and I've decided that it's a political strategy, because politicians like Nancy Pelosi and all sorts of other politicians have to show their machismo by talking tough about how we're going to back Taiwan, and we'll use military force as necessary to defend Taiwan on its behalf against any sort of attack from China. So when Biden talks like that, I think he's playing to the domestic audience. Then the White House sends a direct message to China that trying to sort of go around this political right. message to say, yeah, we don't really mean that we're changing our policy in any way. Which, and our policy, of course, is this policy of strategic ambiguity, which means that we recognize that Taiwan is part of China. We recognize that Taiwan will eventually get folded into China, but
not that we're going to defend it.
Well, in 1979, that we carefully worded that congressional action to say that were China to try and change the status quo in a military fashion, we would consider supporting Taiwan. Okay, that's some pretty ambiguous language. Pretty iffy, and what we were trying to do is appeal to the domestic audience at that point to say, look, we're not really pulling the plug on Taiwan altogether.
Dave from Mequon, good morning, Dave. How you doing?
Good morning, Sandy. Good morning, Earl. Really quickly, I just wanted to bring attention to you in regards with the troops and stuff, but not being located in Ukraine. That's true. However, there was a New York Times article, I think, in July that reported there's a lot of ex-military forces and high-level personnel. They're actually working with the Ukrainians and actually helping them out figure out plans to attack.
Yeah, but they don't represent the United States government. Those
they're operating as mercenaries.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So you do have that. And the other thing is I should mention, and I just found this out last night. I actually am friends with a rabbi here in Mequon, and they still have family in Russia. And, Putin has put out letters to people. He has a friend that's 56 years old. He was actually required now to go into the military, even though he's overweight and 56 years old. So there is something to be said that this is more dangerous, in the fact that he's trying to recruit as many people as possible. And if you look what's going on in Moscow, I mean, there's people fleeing the city of Moscow because they are worried they're going to get pushed into this war and conflict with Ukraine. It's scary times. And then the other thing I should just mention to you as well, to both of you, the other thing that's coming in the equation is obviously winter is coming around the corner here. And winter is going to have severe impacts not only on both Ukrainian soldiers and Russian soldiers, but the rest of Europe because of the gas shutoff. And I've already been told that people are going to have to not turn their lights on, use their ovens as nearly as much, and all sorts of things. So it's going to be a very, it's just more than just Ukraine and Russia,
In fact,
a lot of Western Europe.
Dave, you're right. I mean, I think what's happened is that in spite of Biden thinking that early on he was talking about how it was important that we help Ukraine so that we could weaken Russia so they would never do anything like this again, that is a denial because it ignores the notion that what will happen to Russia is essentially destabilization. What's happening in Russia right now with the public in Russia being so upset about the call-up is that it's destabilizing the political environment in Russia. Much as we don't like Putin, I'm not sure we're going to like a vacuum in Russia either. A vacuum is what happened in 1991. And furthermore, what's going to happen this winter in Europe is going to destabilize Europe in terms of, number one, economically and sociologically, they're going to suffer quite a bit. But it could be destabilizing to the European Union and the NATO alliance as they begin to develop fracture points in those alliances, as some parts of Europe decide that they aren't willing to suffer the consequences of this in quite the same fashion as other parts of Europe.
So there are Americans who will say, okay, that's Europe, that's not America. And that's not our focus. That's not something we should be focused on. What's going on, that's Europe's issue. and not mine as an American citizen. And so this is what I'm saying, Dave and Sandy. I just don't believe they've made or laid out reason enough that the American people are really focused enough on this.
Well, and I think Dave is pointing out that maybe the lack of sophistication in our foreign policy and our ability to simplistically view this as we against them, and the ability of us to develop all these sanctions and a unity of the sanctions. I think we probably had the same unfortunate expectation on a mirror image that Putin had. Putin thought he could march into Kyiv and topple Ukraine's government and accomplish his objectives in a number of days, and that there wouldn't be a prolonged war, and that all that would happen would be a regime change in which there would be a much more sympathetic regime in Ukraine set up, sympathetic to Russia. We thought that our sanctions, particularly as we unified the sanctions, would throttle Putin in some manner. I'm not sure how we realistically thought it would throttle him into submission, but I think we thought it would have a significant impact in a short term. And I think we've now come to realize that the long-term implication of these sanctions is much more difficult to digest. Are we agreeing, Dave?
Dave, hang on a second. Let's bring Don into the conversation. Good morning, Don. Thank you very much for the call. You say what?
You guys are talking on a different topic now. I wanted to go back to the, you were talking about the American dream, and so maybe I better...
Don, so let us finish this conversation. You can...
Call
back later.
Later.
Yeah.
Sure, that's
yeah.
what I was
so,
gonna
all right,
tonight.
All right, so Dave, you're saying what?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. Really quickly, I was going to also say the one thing I have noticed in particular with Putin, if you notice, his health has been declining quite a bit. He's got
how can you tell?
Because I've looked on the BBC and they've had video of him where his legs got weird twitches. His arms and stuff. There's something. They're saying his health is not up to snuff. And the thing that I'm worried about is, even though people don't think he is going to use a nuclear weapon, I do think, according to what Sandy said, with the sanctions and everything else, if, you know, you're pinned against the wall, I mean, that would be a potential for him to say, okay, you know what, I'm just going to hit the nuclear weapons and start using it.
Can he unilaterally do something like that, Sandy?
Well, there was an article in the New York Times this weekend about the fact that there question is, what kind of checks and balances are there in this line of command with respect to nuclear weapons? And we in America have been concerned about that, because that football that allows the president with pretty unilateral capacity to push the button with respect to nuclear weapons. And we were worried about that with Donald Trump. And there were generals who said they might throw their body in the way of it, but they would have done it against the law, not consistent with the law of constraints. And this article basically said that the same is true in this autocracy that has been set up in Russia now, that it's probably very few checks and balances other than some brave general who would throw his body in front of the process and keep it from happening. And that did happen, apparently, at the time of the Cuban Missile Crisis, when there was a submarine captain who basically kept a rash circumstance from coming into effect. And so, you know, can it happen? You know, the one of the problems with destabilizing the world is, when you destabilize the world, you can't tell what's going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, clearly we're at a situation that I don't think any of us could have ever even imagined 3 to 4 years ago, or 5 years ago, or even 3 years ago. And we're there. And yet, at the same time, Sandy, you add the fact that we were doing the same bravado talk to China. At the same time, we're dealing with this in Ukraine. And instead of us trying to you know, make these things, you know, less acceptable. We're ratcheting up those things,
yeah,
and that's the problem with it.
I think the history, I mean, one of the problems, I think, is that our intelligence community has kind of thrived on this notion that they can destabilize a government and then get it replaced by something that's more sympathetic to the United States. Well, that's maybe worked in some banana republics and some other places, but of course what we end up replacing that government with is not something that maybe has sustainability in terms of being a government that's there and embraced by the people. We did that with the Shah of Iran. How did that turn out in the long run? Now we have an Iran that we can't deal with, and in large part it's because of that, the fact that we twiddled with the Iranian political process in 1953, got rid of Mogadishu, installed the Shah, and now we have a problem.
All right, got to go to a break. 844-967-2789 is the number. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Earl Ingram Show. As always, you can join us at 844-967-2789. That's 844-967-2789. Text us at that same number. It's Monday. That means Mondays with Sandy Williams. And Sandy, you know, this is another one of those conversations that, look, I mean, we could come in and we could talk about subjects that would tickle the ear, right? You know, I mean, a lot of things we can talk about tickle here. I mean, we come in and talk about, you know, the coach for the Celtics and what happens with him.
Well, we could also just talk about what happened yesterday.
Yeah, we
and report on that without putting it into a context of what happened yesterday. What might it mean, or what do we think about it, or how should we think about it?
But I think it's important, as you and I both agree, that we talk about and have conversations that will make people pause and think, and even if it's frightening. Because it is frightening, Sandy. Come on. Those of us who have, you know, saw some footage or read something about Hiroshima and Nagasaki, and that was way back in 1941, but 45. And so 19...
In fact, in like August, September type time period.
Of 1945. And yet, we saw or read about people just disappearing and seeing shadows where they stood. Or the fact that it had this long-term impact and affect nuclear weapons?
Well, I think, you know, we started this out talking about denial and wishful thinking. And I think part of our wishful thinking is the way in which we think about our military and combat and warfare generally, which is to turn it into something like NFL football, something we can talk about in a machismo way, you know. And the fact is that the horror of war, if we really understood it, would not be something we would talk about in that manner. And we would be very careful about doing things in the world that might create warfare, whether it be warfare we're participating in or warfare other people participate in, because the horror of war is unbearable. It is, you know, war is hell, and the fact is that the American public, because of our best allies, which are the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans, have been insulated from war and capable of just talking about it like they are adventurers.
So let's you know, President Obama upgraded our nuclear arsenal, and he was followed by President Trump, who continued to upgrade our nuclear arsenals, and, you know, newer, bolder, more dangerous nuclear weapons, quicker, faster?
Well, you know, a lot of those policies are formulated by this establishment in Washington that is embedded in our State Department and in our intelligence agencies, who are kind of wonkishly interested in this kind of, and from their standpoint, it's like playing a war game on a computer. It's all very intellectualized, and it's discussed in very intellectual manner about the game strategy that's applied. Game strategy meaning this applied probabilistic approach to war games. Well, what do we need to do? And so the world is divided into enemies. We then assume that we have these enemies. We identify them. They're Russia. Now we have to deal with our enemy, Russia. And so then our intelligence agencies and this establishment tells us that game we have to play. And you know, Obama's playing, and the presidents we have end up playing a computer game of warfare that's dictated to them by this apparatus that tells them how many missiles, what we need to do. And Putin's got the same thing going. So, you know, we're involved in something that we ought to get a grip on. The American public and the world ought to get a grip on, and we ought to understand this much better than we do.
Well, you know, you get to a point where we as Americans realize this is out of our control.
Well, we should see. This is where we... I hope on this show we can repeat this conversation, because the real problem we in America have is that we expend what's approaching $1 trillion a year on a defense budget that is premised on all of these kind of NFL and defense intelligence, defense establishment ideas that have caused us to expend an enormous amount of our treasure on stuff that probably, if we thought about it and understood it better as an American public, we would change our way.
And also, Sandy, if we focused on it, paid more attention to it, then we can impact and affect our foreign policy. The foreign policy of this nation, at the root of it, should be the American people.
Right.
Right?
Yes.
I mean, when it gets beyond the American people.
And not America first the way Donald Trump thought about it, because America first, from his standpoint, was really sort of the corporate America first. What we need is America's people first in the policies of America, which would include our foreign policy, okay? And we would analyze it much, much differently, and we would not be sticking our nose in all of these places where we don't really have business, and we aren't even, you know, we are in denial about the reasons we stick our nose into all these places. One of those denials being we're going to spread America's version of democracy to all these places.
Well, because right now, the American people know nothing about the foreign policy of our nation. And they say they do this in your and my name. We've got all these bases all over the world. They say they do that in your and my name. And we never say, well, nobody asked us.
Right.
It's our treasure, right?
Uh-huh.
I mean, if we didn't put the treasure there, they couldn't do what they do.
Well, if someone came to the family and said, we're going to spend half of the money you've got every year on something, but we can't tell you too much about it. All we can tell you is that you need to have this so that your house and home and family are safe, but we aren't going to tell you much about the dangers, and you aren't going to really have anything to do with it because we are much smarter than you are about it. You know what? We would roll up our sleeves and say, no. You've got to come in, and we're going to meet with you like all the time.
Right.
And we're going to find out what it is that's so important, because as far as we're concerned, we don't want to spend half our money this way.
And you know what? It goes back to Tom. We are the government. If we only realize that, as Tom always says,
we
could begin, we the people, can begin to put a dent in it. All right, got to leave it there, Sandy. As always, great having you on. Thank everybody who made the show go. Thank you, Connor. I'll be back on tomorrow. You've been tuned into the Earl Ingram Show. Enjoy the weather. See you tomorrow. Oh,